In 1952, only 30% of the world's people lived in cities. Now more than half do. And by the end of this century, that number will grow to 80%. All metropolitan areas are facing challenges. Climate change brings risk of rising seas, increased heat, and in certain areas of the country, drought. Their infrastructure is crumbling with a D-plus rating from the American Society of Civil Engineers. More than 20 million American families now spend over 50% of their income on housing. According to a new book, these problems are just the tip of the iceberg and must be addressed. In the well-tempered city, what modern science, ancient civilization, and human nature teach us about the future of urban life, urban innovator Jonathan Rose provides a blueprint for cities of the future. Again, the title of the book is The Well-Tempered City, and we welcome Jonathan Rose to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
How did the book come to be? What brought you down this path?
So I've been thinking about cities for most of my life, and also, but thinking about cities in a very big way. So my profession is a real estate developer. I actually build very green, affordable, mixed-income housing. So I'm deeply engaged in cities and communities. But I've thought about cities from the beginning of history. How did they emerge? What are the enormous environmental and social issues that they're facing, and how can they help solve them? And I love studying those ideas, and writing was a way of wrestling with all the ideas I was learning, and the editing process really forced me to have to find coherence amongst this very wide range of things I was looking at.
Talk a little bit about the title, which is The Well-Tempered City. What do you mean by that?
So the title itself actually refers to this idea of coherence. As I was thinking about metaphors for the coherence that I think we need to really make our cities thrive and to create equality, make them landscapes of opportunity. So as I was thinking about all these issues, I've been listening to the music of Bach as I write. And in the early 1700s, or actually late 1600s, a new system of tuning called temperament came from China across the Silk Route and into Europe. Before that system, each key had to be performed individually. You couldn't move from key to key in performance. Temperament allowed instruments to be tuned in such a way that you could mash all the keys together. Bach was a deeply religious man, and his goal was to capture the harmony of the universe, the whole, what he thought was the architecture of creation, through music. And all of a sudden, temperament unleashed his ability to do that. He could integrate 24 major and minor keys across the keyboard, and he explained that music, how to do that, through this incredible piece of music called the Well-Tempered Clavier. Now, the clavier actually is a new instrument, which was the forerunner to the piano. So this idea that his new tuning system I liken to a new operating system, and the clavier is like a new technology, that you could actually use new tunings, new operating systems and technologies to create the integration that we need to get our cities to a better place.
That idea of getting the cities to a better place, obviously it's not one size fits all. It's what would work for this city as compared with what would work for that city. And I guess I'm interested in how that determination is made, who should make that determination, and understand what the repairs are that need to be made.
Oh, okay. That's a big and complicated question. So first of all, little context. The world's population by 2050 is projected to be 10 billion people. They're becoming more prosperous, so they're consuming enormous amount. They're polluting enormous amount. We're creating and putting a lot of carbon dioxide and methane into the air, so the climate is rapidly changing. The effects of climate change will affect our cities. The world is also rapidly urbanizing. We're seeing income inequality grow. So we have some really, despite the economic income inequality and environmental issues of today, the trends are going to be much, much worse. In terms of repairs, the American Society of Civil Engineers says that America, they rate our infrastructure at D+. They say we have a $3.4 trillion deficit in mass transit, roads, bridges, highways, water systems, sewer systems, our schools. And that's not even figuring out what we need to be a competitive nation in the 21st century. I mean, China and Europe are doing incredible high-speed rail and systems that we're not even thinking of. So that's one thing. There's a series of investments we need to make. The question is, how do we figure out what are the best ones for us? And that takes me to another issue, which is our communities really don't have visions. They don't have strong visions about where they want to go. What kind of places do they want to be? How do they want to prosper and make sure that prosperity is environmentally responsible and shared with all? So in the book, I describe a process for how we can get there. It starts with developing a vision, and we have seen the best visions are created by, not by government itself. It can be done by government. There's some amazing examples around the world of incredible mayors creating a vision for their city. But more often, we see community organizations getting together and forming something like in around the Salt Lake City area, a group called Envision Utah was formed. And they take responsibility for hiring a master planner and creating community, a huge amount of region-wide community input. There's another group in the New York metropolitan area called the Regional Plan Association that does this. And then laying out a vision for the region. And we've seen that to be very, very effective. So it's a combination of higher-level leadership, broad-based leadership across the region, and a lot of community-based input.
Do you believe that the city and its residents will know when where they reside has a either a more even temperament or, more concretely, an even temperament?
So the best way to figure that out is more and more communities are doing something called community health indicators. For example, the city of Santa Monica has, and many cities are now developing these. And these are actually a set of metrics that define what livability and health is for the community. And you can have as many as you want. Typically, there are a series of environmental metrics, such as levels of pollution and how much carbon dioxide is being put in the air and how clean or polluted the water is, whether there's lead in the water. There are social measures as to how well people are doing, school measures as to how well the kids are performing in school, the amount of drug use in the school, the amount of advanced placement classes the kids are doing really well at. There are social measures about community connectivity. There are measures of political activity, such as off-major election voting participation. So there's a level of affordable housing, jobs, housing balance. The community comes up with all these issues that are important to them and the ways to measure them. There can be hundreds of these. We now live in an age with an enormous amount of big data. We can take information from health sources and government sources and our cell phones and traffic data, all this stuff, and convert it, make it accessible, and compare it to the community health indicators. So the community can actually see in real time, are they getting closer or farther away from their goals?
When you think about the goals, and again, I'm interested in the fact that all parties are heard. And how do you see that? How does that work? And that you do get a broad coalition that are ultimately making these very important decisions.
So interestingly, typically the governments make the decisions, not the broad coalitions define what the vision is. And through these indicators, they can watch their government and make sure their government is actually carrying out what their goals are. When you see these processes work really well, they require political consensus building. We see that happen much more easily at the local level often than we see at the national level. I'm thinking, for example, in the Denver metropolitan region, literally in the 1970s and early in the 80s, Mayor Federico Pena had a vision of the whole region integrated by light rail. And he brought in the other council of governments, began to plan the system. Mayor after mayor then consistently executed the system. It's a fantastic system. It keeps growing. It keeps knitting the region together. It's helping resolve traffic, making people's lives more accessible. So part of it is you actually have to deliver results on the ground. There's an important idea called collective efficacy. When community organizations at the neighborhood level or the larger level like the regional I just mentioned, but let's work at the neighborhood level, can act and make a difference in their neighborhood and actually feel that they made a difference, that creates a feedback loop called collective efficacy, and then being effective makes people want to be more effective. And their collective efficacy grows, their power grows, And very often their inclusiveness grows. As a matter of fact, the best leaders of neighbors, there's been some interesting tracking, best leaders of neighborhoods are very inclusive.
The name of the book is The Well-Tempered City, What Modern Science, Ancient Civilization, and Human Nature Teach Us About the Future of Urban Life. The book is published by Harper. Jonathan Rose, a great pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, The Well-Tempered City. It is published by Harper. Jonathan Rose, the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.